Hello, you're listening to Germantown Community Radio, WRLGLP, at 92.9 FM in Northwest Philadelphia. Welcome to Vanessa's Money Hour, where I profile people, programs, resources, and strategies supporting financial security and wealth building. I'm your host, Vanessa Lowe. The show airs every Saturday and Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I welcome your questions, your guest suggestions, and your feedback. You can email those to Vanessa at gtownradio.com. Today, we have three wonderful guests who are going to talk about a wonderful program that I am so excited about, the Raise Roundup Pitch Competition, kind of like Shark Tank, but nicer. Wednesday is the big event, but these three folks have been working very hard on this program for the last several months. And it is a program that is specifically for Black women entrepreneurs. So without any further ado, let's start talking to our guests. First, let me just make sure everybody has arrived. And so I just want a brief check-in. Diane, have you arrived with us?
I have. It's great to be here, Vanessa.
Joining us. And Tanya?
I am here. Tanya T. Morris is present.
Okay, great. And Jason?
Yes, present. Thanks, Vanessa.
Great. All right. Well, we're going to start with Diane. Now, Diane and I have been together before. She's the executive director of Women's Way, but I'll leave it at that and let Diane sort of tell a little bit about Women's Way and how we came to developing this particular program, the Raise Roundup Pitch Competition.
Well, thank you, Vanessa, for having me on your show again. I love your show. And I just changed my job title to Chief Disruptor. So I'm now Chief Disruptor at Women's Way, which is the leading region's leading nonprofit organization dedicated to the advancement of women and girls. And we are very serious about advancing gender equity. And we know that we cannot ever achieve gender equity without achieving racial equity. So it's the intersection of gender and race that we really need to address. And about 5 years ago, we started something called the Women's Economic Security Initiative because we know that women, particularly Black and brown women, are at the bottom of the economic pyramid, and economic insecurity affects all facets of someone's life. And so we started that with the goal that all women in the greater Philadelphia region will attain economic security for themselves and their families. And we recently transitioned it to the Gender Wealth Institute because we're all about not just decreasing poverty, but about building assets and wealth. We know that wealth promotes long-term economic security for women and also for the next generation, for the children. And one of the things we were looking at is, you know, entrepreneurship. We know building businesses is a great way to build assets. And yet we also know that women entrepreneurs, particularly Black and brown women entrepreneurs, get less than 1% of all venture capital. And yet Black women entrepreneurs are the fastest growing entrepreneurs in our region, but they don't have the capital needed to actually start and grow their companies. And so to address the gender and racial wealth gap, we believe we need to move more capital to women entrepreneurs, particularly Black and brown women entrepreneurs in our region.
And transition to how we got Tanya. Talk to us. How did you get connected to this project?
So through one of my advisors, Scott Wheeler at Strategy Arts, connected me to Diane to be on a panel discussion for the Gender Wealth Institute on entrepreneurship. So I was a panelist on that. And Diane and I just continued to have conversations. Our organization, Mom Your Business, works with Black and brown female founders, and particularly in helping them to increase their access to capital through education, mentorship, and access to capital. So that is our mission. That is our goal. And so Diane and I just continue to talk about ways that we could work together, ways that we could partner, and how we would put something together that was designed to put more capital into the hands of Black and brown female founders.
Great. Thank you for being with us, Tanya. This is the first time Tanya and I are connecting. But I have seen, because I'm on LinkedIn a lot these days, I have seen Mom Your Business. Give us a little background. How long have you been in business, and what sort of particular services are you offering to female entrepreneurs?
So we started back in 2017. I often say I'm an entrepreneur by accident. I spent the majority of my career in nonprofit doing mentorship. I've been everything from a job coach to a community outreach strategist. What happened was it was a special event. I always did events. I published 3 books, always did special events, whether that was hosting a tea or some type of concert. I hosted an event in 2017, called it Mom Your Business. A friend of mine thought that it was more than just a one-time event. And we put together a brainstorming session, and that was how we landed on our mission, which was to help mompreneurs, which we define as any woman actively in business, blending work, life, family, and a bunch of other stuff, helping them to grow their businesses by connecting them to resources and opportunities that lead to success in business and in life. So even then, I didn't know what it was going to be. One thing I knew we would do would be mentorship throughout my career. I've been a benefactor of mentorship as well as being a mentor myself. And so that was the only thing I knew we would be committed to doing. When the pandemic came, it forced me to be at home really working and thinking about what else we were going to offer. And that was when we started our Founders to Funders Cultivating Female Startups Business Accelerator Program. So that whole year when we were inside, that's what I was doing. I was raising money. I was recruiting. I was creating the curriculum. So that is our primary program right now. We also do think tanks. We do speed mentoring events. We do a pop-up shop, which we're actually having a pop-up shop this Saturday, the 18th. So those are just some of the things that we do. And that's it.
Great. So Tanya Morris, actually, let's go ahead and give them your website. You might be interested.
Yeah. It's Mom Your Business, M-O-M, Your, Y-O-U-R, business.com.
Wonderful. All right. And then Jason, tell us about yourself and how you're connected to this wonderful project.
Absolutely. I met Tanya through Diane, actually, after her and Diane had been having some conversations about early stage investing. Diane looped me in. I'm the founder and CEO of Zenith Wealth Partners. We're based here in Philadelphia, and we provide investment management and financial planning services to individuals, families, business owners, and organizations. And you'll feel our services provide a platform to share learnings and advice that can address wealth inequalities that exist with race, gender, and age, mainly through educational partnerships and impact investing. We work with, like I said, individuals and organizations. Both tend to be mission aligned with our firm, and Women's Way is actually a proud, hopefully, Zenith client. So it's a pleasure to work with Diane and Tanya, and this has been a great initiative to try to promote a healthy ecosystem for Black and Brown women-owned businesses in Philadelphia. We talked about some of the applications and the reasons that Diane and Tanya join this initiative, and we heard it from our applicants so far, right? They don't think they have an adequate financial position, that they do feel like if they could raise money, they could positively impact their community and their customers, their employees in a more thoughtful way. So it's a great initiative, and it's a pleasure to work with these two.
Wonderful. So let's take it back to when you were first thinking about this. So Women's Way, longtime advocate of women's empowerment, many, many years. But that's the thing. I don't recall ever hearing about a pitch competition. I mean, this is essentially your, Tanya, give us the specifics of what the winnings are. Ooh. And also the criteria. So who gets to apply to this? And what's their incentive for applying?
Well, their incentive is the prize money. So that's their incentive. First prize is $50,000 due to the graciousness of Women's Way. And then we have some other smaller prizes. Our goal was to ensure that everyone walked away with something, because even $500 to $1,000 couldn't contribute to a female founder growing their business. And so we landed on a pitch competition really just through discussions. You know, I tell people all the time that I have an 8 a.m. standing Friday meeting, and it's probably the most productive meeting I have all week, because for the last, 6 to 8 weeks, we've been talking on Fridays, and we just, you know, we landed on a pitch competition as the way to get this money to female founders. So the criteria was to be a Black or Brown female founder, be in business located in the Philadelphia region, which included the four other counties of Bucks, Montgomery, Delaware, and Chester, as well as South Jersey. So that was pretty much the criteria.
Okay. So they didn't have to be in business for a certain amount of time or a certain amount of revenues?
Well, revenue was not a criteria. We wanted early stage businesses, so you know, we didn't want any multi-million-dollar businesses or close to that. We were really looking for early stage businesses, and in particular, small businesses. And small business, as defined by the SBA, is any business less than 500 employees. So I think we were pretty safe with the criteria that we put together.
Yeah, especially when I think somebody was giving the statistics on the number of Black women-owned businesses and how small they are. Very often, yep. One woman shop. Right?
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. So, when did it get announced, and how many applications did you get? Who wants to take that? Tell us about your application pool.
Well, Jason.
Yeah. So we had 58 applicants. Like I said, they told us some really powerful things in their application process. It was difficult to whittle it down, but we were able to invite 10 finalists to the final competition on Wednesday. Those finalists are, what we feel outstanding companies, and it's, you know, I'm happy that we did the initial screen, and we'll leave it to some external judges to make the final decision, because these companies look outstanding. I think we want to formalize an effort to continue to support not only the winners of the competition or the 10 that made the finalist pitch, but everybody who applied. And we really want to use this competition as a learning springboard to best understand how to support each company in a way that is accessible and meaningful to them, and allows us to, you know, create impact here and in the city that, you know, we all care about and want to see better.
So, Jason, talk us through the questions in the application, because I thought it was just sort of the basic questions, but if you're saying you learned some things, open-ended essays that they had to fill out, talk us through what questions they had to answer for you.
Definitely. So we collected kind of the typical, you know, name, email, upload your pitch deck. But we also collected some information about their thoughts on their company. So we asked them how would they rate their ability to attract funding to scale their business. Many of them, less than half, had even a medium answer out of 1, 2, 3. Less than half had a 2. And we asked them about their current financial position. 90% said that their financial position was not adequate. And then we also asked them if they could add value to their customers, employees, community by attracting fundraising. And overwhelmingly, they said that they agreed with that statement. And with those questions, we asked them as a follow-up, well, why do you think, you know, you could have an impact with additional funds, right? And that's an open-ended question that, you know, we didn't have a word limit on. Some people really took that and ran. Others had a very short, succinct answer. I saw outstanding answers in both formats. We asked them about their business and kind of tell us how long they've been around and what their role is, what their target audience is, what their business model and revenue streams and any funding to date were. So that's pretty much that's the bulk of the info we captured. I think we'll capture some more data points at the event as well. And, you know, I think, you know, we need to iron that out and hope it will be organic as well. But I think they're going to tell us a little bit more in that final round.
Okay. So 58 is good. Did you have a goal, a particular goal of how many you wanted applications? Not really.
Okay. Now that's a good question. I don't think we ever said anything about a goal. I was surprised that we got 58. frankly. It seemed like businesses came out of the woodworks. I'm sure Tanya would say, like, oh, Jason, like, you're just not in the game and on the ground floor. But I was really happy with the 58. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I think we probably, honestly, Vanessa, it probably would have been a higher number than that, because we certainly had more clicks than just that, right? So I think had some other folks, and this really kind of speaks to where some of the businesses found themselves that may have clicked and said, oh, I'm not ready for this. So I really believe, not just because of the monetary award, I believe as we move forward and we continue to even support some of these businesses post the competition, we're going to see an increase in applications as we move forward.
Okay. Well, I don't think I'm going to spoil anything. You all have a plan to do this again. So this isn't the first time. So let's use this as a first sort of way of sort of saying, hey, folks, pay attention. So how would they find out? Is there a mailing list? Is there a website they can go to make sure that they're, you know, going to be on the next round, raise roundup? And maybe go back to talking about where was it posted? How did you get the word out?
Well, I'll start, Diane from Women's Way, that we have a huge network through social media and through our newsletter. So Imani Harris, who manages our communications, we did e-blasts, we posted it through social media, we did some directed outreach to a lot of, we work with over 80 partners in the region, and they have their networks. And so we did a lot of communicating these Women's Way through our social media platforms and through all our existing partners.
What can you talk about the diversity of the businesses? Because it sounds like there's a place I've seen now in a lot of these sort of VC things. It's sort of we're industry agnostic. That, you know, they'll take, you know, hair salons to technology. So talk about the breadth of the different kind of businesses that you got in the application pool.
Jason,
we got a wide range. I'm just looking at the finalist list even. We have two companies that are focused on experiential opportunities, for one visiting Philadelphia and others more educational. We have a venture and like a venture community platform called Bright Ventures that is really interesting and unique. We've got a workforce development type business in Trabaja that reached out and applied and made it to the final round. We have a business from the journalism and communication sector that's being launched out of Resolve here in Philadelphia that, again, is interesting. We have a hair care product that's in the mix, an impact investment measurement platform. So, the companies that are represented are from, you know, almost every industry. The only industries that I can't find are anything related to energy. So think about like energy development or drilling or otherwise, and really no like manufacturing or industrial industries either. I don't know if though that's because those type of companies may just not, this type of capital would not be right for their business. That's my inclination, but yeah, we don't really see those in the mix right now.
Okay. So the $50,000 grant will go to one organization. Mm-hmm. And are there rules around how they can spend that?
Well, I wouldn't say rules, but one of the instructions that we've given to our judges is that what we're looking for is for, and I've told this to our pitch participants, we did a workshop with them to help them kind of prepare. And one of the things that I stressed to them was the slide that's called the use of funds slide. And I think what we're looking for is a use of funds that is going to demonstrate measurable and sustainable impact for their business, right? So we're not looking for a use of funds that says, hey, we're going to get a new website, we're going to get a brochure, you know. No, we want to see someone, and I'll just use an example that's going to purchase a certain amount, has a purchase order and needs to purchase their product to get made and developed to get them into a store shelf. No, that's going to be life-changing. That's going to totally change their business. So those are the kinds of things that we've instructed our judges that what we're looking for, because we want to be able to add that, and we want to be able to use that moving forward as we continue to look for more investors to invest in these businesses to show, hey, this was a measurable impact based on the money that we were able to distribute.
Tanya, that's helpful. Let's go back to, because Jason mentioned one of the application components was the pitch deck.
Mm-hmm.
People, let's assume we have entrepreneurs on the line here, and maybe they haven't watched Shark Tank. So tell us what a pitch deck is, and tell us exactly what y'all were asking for and what that is that they had to submit.
So a pitch deck is basically a PowerPoint presentation. It should be a minimum of 10 slides that basically tells the story of the business. The aha moment that created it, the business model or revenue model, how they make money, the marketing, the target marketing, who their market is, and what their plans are for the future. And again, the financials and the use of funds. And so, you know, I've won a couple pitch competitions myself. I'm an alumni of Black Girl Ventures, which is a national nonprofit out of Washington, D.C. So I have a, you know, amount of experience working, you know, with Shelley, who's been a tremendous influence on me personally as well as professionally. And so that's why we thought it was important to include a session to show them what a pitch deck was and what it meant, you know, and how to use it. So because 3 to 5 minutes is, especially for Black women, not a long time to tell your story. So in 3 to 5 minutes, you got to try to tell the story, maybe more like 4 minutes. And so we wanted to really kind of, you know, put them in the position to be successful.
So was there a template that people could fill in?
No, it wasn't. Most of them had, they had their own decks. And so even now, if anybody, you know, wanted to go, that's something that I do on a regular as a part of our cohort, as a part of our programming. We do pitch deck reviews and help folks in those areas and pitch mentoring. We have a couple coaches that work with folks that around those things, because we want folks to win money.
And yeah. Tanya's downplaying, I think, her help here that she gives in providing pitch decks. She had a dynamic session called The Power of the Pitch for all of our applicants, you know, a few days ago, to run them through how to think about their pitch deck and how to think about their actual pitch as well when it came down to the kind of the final round. So I'm sure we were going to see some improvement in our own audience just from Tanya's work with them.
But you're saying all the applicants had access to that workshop, and then the improvements that they made helped to lead to the final 10 that you've selected.
Absolutely.
Great, great. That sounds like a really fantastic resource. I'm just thinking back to, you know, so much of what I heard about Black businesses being able to access the PPP loans and the other resources was because of the financials. You know, they didn't have their parent who was an accountant helped them with the financials. They didn't necessarily have QuickBooks, or they didn't even have a spreadsheet. They just knew their numbers. And here now, even for the most basic applications, they were asking for tax returns and other things. Can you speak to that issue, Tanya, and why that's so important? And maybe again, for the entrepreneurs who are listening, what are some of the basics that are really necessary for any small business to maintain so that they can share their numbers and understand their own numbers and talk about them in a way that will make other people want to invest in them?
Yeah, you know, one of the first business accelerator programs I ever went through myself was at the Enterprise Center, was called Elevate with Della Clark. And Della came in the very first class and she said, and I tell all of my ladies this, know your numbers. And so we really stressed that part of the story. You have to know your numbers. And you spoke to it, Vanessa, relative to the PPP loan. And I can tell you so many stories. We don't have time to go through how many people were turned away or walked away because they weren't financially where they needed to be just from a bookkeeping standpoint. And so it's really critical to being able to have success. And so, and I'm sure Jason has seen that even with some of the businesses that he's worked with, how important it is. It is the most important and critical part of running any small business is really knowing your numbers. And so we really try to work with our folks around them. We just started a new partnership with 1 million Black businesses with Operation Hope that's going to provide them some more support around that. They're going to have access to some financial coaches to work with them around business financing and some other things. All of our pitch participants actually are going to have an opportunity to take advantage of that.
Wow. Wow. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Sealed the deal. I actually sealed the deal today. So this is the first Jason and Diane are hearing of this as well. So.
My audience wants to know. Tell us about it.
So Operation Hope has a program called 1 million Black Businesses, where they're looking to help over the next 10 years, 1 million Black-owned businesses. And so met with them today, and they're going to be providing Spotify. They're going to be providing QuickBooks for a period of time to businesses, as well as access to their coaching and volunteer platform to cover everything from legal to bookkeeping to marketing to web development, all of those things. We're now a program partner with Operation Hope for their 1 million Black businesses. So I'm ecstatic because the first recipients of that will be the ladies that are part of the pitch competition.
Wow, that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm applauding silently.
Yes.
There you go, little finger snap for that. Yes, it's all about partnerships, right?
Yes.
That's dedicated, yeah. Tell us a little bit more about Operation Hope. I've worked with him, and one of the things that I think is really important with the new resources that are coming along, because, you know, we're hearing about, you know, Amazon gave 100,000 here and so-and-so gave 100,000 there. And it's like, well, that's nice. That's a penny out of your pocket. But I particularly like to profile Black-led resources that are really stepping up. And Operation Hope, I think, what is it, John Bryant Hope is his name?
I believe so.
Yeah. So he's been doing this for quite a while. My last job was with Economic Development Administration. And in fact, they have an award, a couple of awards through that agency, the U.S. Economic Development Administration, to work with businesses in Puerto Rico. So Operation Hope, check them out. They really have great resources. Good. Well, congratulations on that. Yeah. Let's go back. So give us just a couple of things. If you're talking to a business owner and they're like, I don't know what to do with my books, what are some of the basics? What do they need? Do they need QuickBooks?
Well, they need something. It doesn't have to be QuickBooks, but if it's just an Excel spreadsheet, the most important thing. Somebody is literally banging on my door. The most important thing is tracking your expenses. You know, you got to keep track of your expenses. You have to pay yourself. I have a founder who still over 3 years has yet to pay herself. And Jen, you know, it's just those are the two main things, tracking your expenses and making sure that you're paying yourself and just keeping in tracking. You got to track your numbers. You got to track them.
And show that you're bringing in something. I mean, that's the thing. Yep. A lot of them are not profitable in the first several years, but that's okay. You just need to show the trends, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Well, great. And it's wonderful to know about your program that can also help with that. All right. So we're going into Wednesday. So describe what's going to happen on Wednesday.
Jason?
So on Wednesday, we are going to introduce the effort and greet our guests, and then, you know, give the floor to our companies for 3 to 5 minutes of their pitch. If they have any leftover time, our judges will be able to answer questions. We have 3 outstanding judges that are coming, representing a couple different areas of, you know, finance and business. And, you know, at the end of the presentations, we'll leave it to the judges. We'll provide them with a rubric for scoring that they'll be able to, you know, use their own subjective judgment on to kind of determine and evaluate the companies that present. And then at the end of the event, we will hand about awards, and you know, people will get their funding, and you know, we'll start the process of keeping the community going and understanding where there may be pain points and understanding where we can add support. But it should be a pretty tight and efficient event to hand out this these awards to these companies, hopefully.
Sounds great. Sounds great. I look forward to going. Can you tell us more about each of the judges, or is that private?
I don't know if it's private, but I'm not sure if we've announced it yet. Tanya, are we okay to, you know,
explain? We can announce the judges. It's Iola Harper, who is the Executive Vice President at the Enterprise Center. Sylvester Mobley of Plain Sight, who's also the founder of Coded by Kids. And Kim, I always get Kim's last name wrong. Is it Cromwell?
Crowley.
Kim Crowley of Permit Capital, who also one of our sponsors. So I think we have put together an absolutely dynamic group of judges. Like, I've known Iola for 20 plus years. Sylvester is an incredible, incredible entrepreneur. And I've heard nothing but wonderful things about Kim from Jason and Diane. So I think we have put together the creme de la creme of judges to really make, and I'm just glad I'm not one of them. I don't know about Jason and Diane. That's I'm just glad I'm not one of them.
I agree with that.
I agree too.
They have a tough job ahead of them.
They do.
Well, you all whittled it down from 58 to 10. Quite a bit of work too. Just because we have time, and this is such a wonderful show for profiling again, other resources that do exist, I heard some familiar names. So Iola Carter.
Harper,
you said, is with the Enterprise Center. Mm-hmm. A little bit about the Enterprise Center, and I hear that they are about to launch an equity fund. Mm-hmm. So a little background on that organization, and then tell us what you know about the equity fund.
I'm going to defer to Jason on that one.
You know, the Enterprise Center is doing great work in the Philadelphia area, a long history of providing capital to minority-owned businesses. I think what, you know, we've heard Ms. Della Clark talk about over the last few years relating to, you know, minority-owned businesses not having the balance sheets able to expand contracts at the state and especially at the federal level, and wanting to provide them with a different solution to, you know, fund their businesses, but still have, you know, a tight balance sheet and one that is, you know, asset heavy instead of debt laden. So they're rolling out the Innovate Capital Growth Fund to invest in the equity of, you know, these contracting businesses that are looking to expand contracts at the state, maybe even the local and the federal level. It's been interesting to watch them, you know, get up and running. I know they're partnering with New Spring Capital to help them with a number of things related to the fund. And they have, I mean, we were talking about our judges, but their team of advisors is an outstanding group of professionals from the likes of, I mean, there's a bunch of them, Steven Sandler. I mean, there's a bunch of people on there that are tremendous. So I think it's going to be a great effort. It's going to create a lot of value for the minority-owned businesses and hopefully for the Enterprise Center. And hopefully that trickles down into their, you know, their minority business lending operation as well, if it benefits their organization. So yeah. I think it's a great effort. Any minority-owned business should be that has contracts with, you know, a municipality should definitely look their way for funding in the future.
Is that specifically what that equity is for? Is for those that are having contracts with the city or any municipality?
Any, you know, really, when going through the bidding process for a public finance contract. Those municipalities tend to look at the balance sheet of the organization or the company that is applying and bidding. It's a huge part of the process that if you don't have a strong balance sheet, it is really difficult to win a contract of any type of magnitude because they have questions about your ability to stomach a downturn or, you know, if cash isn't paid on time, your ability to carry out the contract. So, you know, the Enterprise Center is doing this now, but I mean, this is happening at the nationwide level. You look at Aerial Investments, Melody Hobson, they're putting together this project called Project Black. They're raising like $100 billion to invest in minority-owned contracting businesses that have federal contracts as well. So this isn't, you know, this is something that Enterprise Center is well-suited to do, but this is happening across the country, especially as infrastructure funds flow down from the federal government and are going to go out to contracting businesses. Now is the time to arm them with more equity and more, you know, strengthen their balance sheet to be able to win these contracts and position them for success.
Okay. I'm going to take a break just because I have to, we have to let them know what they're listening to. Be prepared because I want to have a larger conversation about this moment in time. Mm. It is our 15 minutes of attention, led in large part from the public executions of Black men, as I call it. And I want to hear your perspectives on that. And, you know, is it only 15 minutes? What can we do in this time to make it sustainable? Those kind of, that's the conversation I want to try to have after I come back. Give me a moment here. For those of you who've just joined us, you're listening to Germantown Community Radio, WRLGLP at 92.9 FM in Northwest Philadelphia. This is Vanessa's Money Hour, and I'm having a conversation with three people about the Raise Roundup Pitch Competition. This has been promoted for Black women entrepreneurs in the Philadelphia region, so the 5-county region. 58 applications came in. We're down to the last 10, and on this Wednesday night, we're going to find out who wins $50,000. And I'm here with three folks, Diane Cornman-Levy, Executive Director of Women's Way, Tanya Morris of Mom Your Business, and Jason Ray of Zenith Wealth Partners, right, Jason? Did I get that right?
That's right.
All right. Let's get back. So, yeah. So is this a 15 minutes of attention that's going to go away pretty quickly? What can we do with it? Jump in anywhere you'd like. Because I like that we're getting a lot of attention, but I feel like I'm a little nervous about it. Tanya, what do you think?
I think that you have your concern is valid, right? I think that, you know, when things happen, they tend to happen, and we tend to forget about those things, right? Something really great. And I mean, there's a huge survey, a young lady named, her last name is escaping me, but she does a newsletter called The Plug, where she provided the data of all the corporations that promised to make donations and initiatives to Black and brown businesses and causes following the murders of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. And the percentages that had actually followed through and that were less than 50%. So to answer your question, yes, you know, I think your concern is valid. And I think that's one of the things that Jason and Diane and I really want to ensure that we're not a flash in the pan. We want to make a significant impact in this area. And one that really I'm confident is going to change our region.
Well, and I like what you said about, you know, their pitch to not just be about we're going to get a website, but how are we really going to grow our business sustainable in the long term, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Jason, what's your take on my 15-minute concern?
I mean, I couldn't agree more with Tanya's sentiment. And I think if we can help early stage Black and brown women owned businesses be more fiscally sound and have more growth opportunities and capital available to them, this will not be a flash in the pan, and we will have a long-term impact and effect on, you know, equity that's driven by more opportunities for Black and brown women owned businesses. And, you know, I think that the moment in time where we're seeing all these corporate pledges, yes, that may fade, but I'm confident that there is enough effort going around our country and around the world to make it a more equitable place. So I don't think this is something that is necessarily going to stop or reverse. It may slow and it may ebb and flow, just like anything, but I think it's going to continue, and it's a long-term trend that we're only going to get more support for this type of effort over the long term.
All right, and we'll end with the funding source. Diane Corman is head of Women's Way, and that's where this $50,000 is coming from. Diane, why don't you give us an update on Women's Way? Because I know you, since you've been there, you've really shifted how Women's Way is operating in order to prioritize and really have it led by the voice of women who have experienced financial insecurity. And that is very different than how Women's Way used to run. Not that there was anything wrong with the old model, but tell us about the model of Women's Way right now. And what sort of next steps are you envisioning, or has the board approved, right? You're the executive director, but these things. How long are we going to see things like this from Women's Way?
As long as I'm there, it's going to be happening. So I'm just going to be very transparent here about how we shifted as an organization is centering racial inequities, racial equity in respect to gender equity. And I mentioned this before in my introduction. And we actually, the board and staff just went through a year-long intervention where we are working on dismantling white supremacy internally within our own mental models, because this country was built on the practices of white supremacy. Our economic system's based on that. And we got to start talking about that directly, not around it. And we internalize it. So we have to do the inner work and then we do the outer work, right? And so part of this movement is about all of us, particularly white folks, really challenging internalized white supremacy and how that guides our language, our decision-making, our practices, our policies. And then once we recognize that and how it's not just harming Black and Brown people, it's actually harming all of us, then how do we then take what we learn and change how we behave, our practices, our policies, our investment decisions, right? And so we're doing a deep dive of that work at Women's Way. And some of the changes we're making is not just that we have a more diverse board in terms of racial makeup, but we changed who's managing our portfolio to a Black-owned, Jason Ray and Chelsea, his partner. We are investing money into Black and Brown women entrepreneurs, because we're basically saying, if you do not invest in those at the bottom of the economic pyramid, which are Black and Brown women, because of racism and sexism over the many years of this country, we will never elevate this country to a point where democracy works for all of us. And when democracy works for all of us, we all benefit. We all benefit. So we are on this long-term journey. And the way to do this is to build partnerships, right? Convening, building partnerships across race, across class, across sexual orientation around a common vision of building a democracy that works for all of us. And so working with Tanya and Jason has just been fabulous. And it's this beginning of a long-term partnership. And we all bring our experiences, our strengths, our assets, and that's the beauty of coming together. And I'm going to say this, white supremacy tells us not to trust each other and divide each other from each other. We're dismantling that by bringing people together, right? And that's where power comes.
Absolutely. Thank you.
The chief disruptor.
There you go. Sometimes you got to be there, right? Yeah. Well, I want to bring up the issue here So I'll tell a little bit of what I'm involved in moving towards sort of racial justice investing, is the phrase I'm using with my denomination. I'm a member of the Social Responsible Investing Committee for my denomination. We've just gone through a process of identifying an African-American woman who's very experienced in this area to come in and do a training with us on what is racial justice investing? What can the components be? Part of me being so excited about getting the applicants that we did was like, we just learned so much about sort of not only what we don't know, but what they don't know. It's sort of like, this is still being built. We're in the beginning of this. But the capacity that is being left on the table because Black folks haven't gotten access to capital is like GDP could be so much higher, right? So all of these, you know, sort of, you know, Black geniuses, Black and Brown geniuses who have these great ideas, but because their daddy couldn't write them $1 million check, you know, the house wasn't passed down, you know, the mansion wasn't passed down. I mean, just sort of basic things. And I'm not saying that all white people have that, but, you know, that's how so much of that wealth was sort of made, because it's like they got those resources from the parents, right? Because that sort of position of wealth happened. So anyway, I raise that as something to, for folks who are listening, to think about in terms of how are we, and how can we use this 15 minutes, because that's the thing, we're getting 15 minutes, there's a lot of money that's rolling in, what can we do to sort of grab it and turn it into something that is sustainable over time? You know, what do we need to invest that in? The last show that I had, actually, this was two shows ago, I played it was a guest lecture that our, what is she? She's the Register of Wills. She's an amazing woman. She is what we call a badass. I think I can say that. Excuse my language. And she won that elected position, which served for 40 years.
Yep.
Moved into that position, Black woman from the neighborhood, single mom, and she has done so much to try to address the issue of tangled
titles,
which is it's a wealth stealer. It's a wealth stealer, yep. Right? And yep. The basic issue is about folks who are living in homes that have been passed down, but nobody had a will.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Will, if there's not a deed with somebody's name on it, then you can't get a loan to fix up the house. You know, you can't sell the house. So I just love that, you know, this is a very specific thing that we can do. And she's developed a very specific program to help people fund, you know, the attorney fees that are needed, the transfer fees that are needed. And so, again, when we get these, because that's the thing, it's sort of like we're getting these windfalls all of a sudden. Right. And so to think about what is the best way to use it in a way that is really sort of long term, this will really have an impact. It's not just sort of plugging a hole where the hole is going to open up again. Does that make any sense? Anyway, so that's kind of what I've been thinking about with all this money that's flowing in that's going to stop, you know. Yeah, Diane, do you want to say something?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tanya.
Go ahead, Diane.
Oh, no. And I think, you know, we have to think about the next generation, and we're doing a lot around financial coaching. And because people don't understand finances, and that's intentionally done. And so so we're training, our goal is to train over 600 organizations to integrate financial coaching into programs that serve women and girls. And of course, we're focusing on women and girls. And also, we're starting to do a lot of advocacy of every school should have financial education as a part of their curriculum.
That's right.
Because I've heard so many stories when, oh God, if I knew this when I was a teenager, or when I made decisions to go to college, and let's talk about college debt, that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
Right? I wouldn't be in this situation. So we got to invest in financial education across across this country. So that's something we're also investing in a lot of time and resources.
So needed.
Tanya, do you want to add something on that?
No, just that Register of Will person that you're talking about is my good friend Tracy Gordon. I've known her for almost 30 years. Tracy and I worked together at the Campaign for Working Families when we were going up against the predatory lenders and those folks that wanted to have folks pay for their income tax refunds and rapid refunds and all of that. So Tracy been radical for decades. I'm so proud of her.
Yeah, these are the kind of folks we need as our elected officials, people who have experience with walking into the payday program and seeing the kind of nonsense they offer, right? Yeah. All right, we've got about, we've got about 10 more minutes, I think, but I want to make sure that we talk about next steps. So Wednesday night is going to be a very exciting night. And, but you said there's something going on in March. So Diane, what's going on in March where we might have another pitch competition? I want people who are listening to be geared up to apply.
Yes. So this hasn't been advertised at all yet. But so as part of the Gender Wealth Institute, we're going to start our first annual Gender Wealth Summit, which is bringing to people from all different sectors around to talk about the drivers of the gender and racial wealth gap and how do we work together across sectors to close those, to close the gap and address those drivers. And part of the day is going to be, it's going to end with another pitch competition for Black and women entrepreneurs, women founders. And hopefully we'll raise even more money for the next one. So that's, again, that's happening hopefully March 11th. I don't want to, you know, we're still looking at venues and things like that. But as we finalize everything, we will be getting, we'll share that information out to the community.
Okay, so if the event would happen on March 11th, it sounds like you'll be getting the word out to people to apply maybe in February or early March.
Yes. Yep.
All right, please include me and I'll try to get it out to my audience for sure.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Wonderful. Jason, let's bring you back in. Tell us about, you're involved with another fund here locally. That I think is targeted to Black and brown folks, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
That's correct. Yes. The Philadelphia Community Impact Fund is a $25 million fund target that we're looking to invest and really create change and really be a catalytic source of capital for early stage minority run and controlled businesses. You know, we have some thoughts about the type of impact that we can try to generate in Philadelphia to make it a better place, like healthcare access, food insecurity and equity, underinvestment in minority-owned businesses. But what we've really found is that a lot of times early-stage minority-owned businesses have a gap in their fundraising where they may be actually be able to access equity, but they can't secure a debt facility, or they need to get some kind of bridge loan to pull down public finance from public finance programs, or they can't get any equity, but they have a lot of debt lined up and lenders ready to lend to them. And so being a flexible fund, we're able to provide capital to those companies in a way that is really effective and efficient and non-extractive for the founder or founders. But also gives them the capital necessary to grow their businesses and complete fundraises that may be stuck in, you know, processing or otherwise. So we've done a few investments so far. You know, we're having the first close on January 1st, which is really exciting. And we should be putting to work, you know, putting that money to work over the course of the next few quarters.
Okay.
Awesome.
They might be interested. What's the criteria? What's the minimum amount? And what website or phone number do they call to learn more?
I have to be extremely careful about saying those criteria because the firm who sponsors it is registered with SEC. Okay. However, you know, I would encourage any type of minority business owner to reach out to me. I help with due diligence and sourcing and screening for the fund. You know, I will say that because of the flexible approach and the need and want for us to be catalytic, there isn't a standard criteria that is necessary in order to, you know, receive an investment from the fund. So it's really about the way the project is progressing and a potential gap in the capital stack that the fund can find its way into. So maybe I can give you a bona fide example, Vanessa. Maybe that would
give
be.
Well, we're running out of time. So the first thing to do is give your contact information so people can call you directly. And then you can give an example quickly.
Awesome. So my phone number, which you can call directly, is 248-568-4626. And my email is jason@networthzenith.com.
Great. Yeah, I think an example would be helpful because the way you're describing it, it's an equity investment or is it a loan?
It can be. So there's it can be either. So an example is, you know, a project that's going on in Philly. You know, it's run by a group and they're looking to secure a piece of real estate in order to create a space for community partners and students. They're able to attract fundraising from the RACB program here in the state of Pennsylvania, which is a forgivable grant, or not a forgivable grant, it is a reimbursable grant from the state to a project. So if the project's going to cost $1 million and they get a RACB award, the company actually has to go spend $1 million before they get the RACB reimbursement. So our fund could come in and say, hey, we see you've received this RACB award, but you actually don't have any cash to spend it in order to get the reimbursement. So we can give you a bridge loan in order for that year or whatever that the project's going on, so that you have the cash on hand, you can spend it. And then when the RACB loan comes in, you can pay off the bridge loan that we provided to you. And those terms are more competitive than, I'll leave it at that. But we want to be competitive with, a traditional lender. And most banks won't even approach that kind of discussion with an early stage, project with limited track record. And we will.
Okay. All right. Is it limited to real estate projects? Again, not trying to put you in a hole, but okay, not.
No, that was just the one example.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Any sector, no restrictions.
There you go. That's your phone may be ringing off the hook tomorrow. I certainly hope it does. Because that's the thing. A lot of times Black and Brown folks don't follow up because it's just like, well, I don't qualify or whatever. So, that's why it's important for people to just, apply for everything. That's what I say, jump on it.
Absolutely.
All right. We are running out of time. Got about a minute and a half, I'd say, to let's just have some closing words from each of you, and then I'll wind it down. Jason, let's start with you. Any final comments to our G-Town audience that may include some entrepreneurs?
I think that any guidance that you can give us on our effort to invest in Black and Brown women, if you have any experience or advice, I welcome, you to reach out and, collaborate with us in this effort. Like Diane said, we're trying to bring people together and create a community around this. I encourage anybody to reach out with any ideas, thoughts, or questions or reactions. So thank you for allowing us to be on here, Vanessa. It's been a pleasure to talk about this and share the stage with Tanya and Diane, which I'm starting to get used to.
There you go. Tanya, closing words from you.
Yeah, just to certainly echo Jason said, this is not a one-shot deal. We're looking to really build something that is going to make a tremendous impact and on the lives of female entrepreneurs, Black and Brown female entrepreneurs in particular in the region. And the only way that's going to happen is through collaboration and partnership. So I am very fortunate to be working with these two powerhouses, and I'm just looking forward to the future and what's going to happen for us long term.
Wonderful. Thank you, Tanya Morris of Mom Your Business. And Corman Levy.
What I always say, investing in women, particularly Black and Brown women, is smart economics. So, and it will benefit all of us. So here at Women's Way, we are continually raising money to invest in Black and Brown women entrepreneurs. So if you're interested, please reach out to me, D. Cornman Levy, DCORNMANLEVY at womensway.org. I'll be glad to talk to anyone that's interested in investing in women entrepreneurs. Money talks, and we need, as everyone says, we need people to join this movement to help build a region where all people are thriving, and you can be part of that movement. So I welcome each and all of you to join us. So thank you, Vanessa, again for a wonderful show.
Thank you, Diane. You said something I just want to clarify. Are you looking for investors or grant people who are making grants or both?
Both. Absolutely. Yes. Both.
All right. Thank you for sharing your contact information. All right. You've been listening to Germantown Community Radio, WRLGLP at 92.9 FM in Northwest Philadelphia. This has been Vanessa's Money Hour. You can listen to us every Saturday and Thursday at 1:00. Thanks so much for joining. Go out and enjoy the day.
You are listening to 92.9 FM Philadelphia, WRLGLP.